Well, good evening. It is good to be back with you tonight. I'll talk this morning how briefly that I'm teaching the adult Bible class on our Wednesday night at church and teaching on prayer and how to pray and what to pray for. And recently we've come to a section that talks about our answered prayers. And I also mentioned this morning how that I'm in the process of putting in for a promotion at work, and I've been through the interview process, and at this time, the decision's already been made. We just haven't been told yet who it was. But what I realized was throughout this interview process, I felt like there was another person that was potentially going to get the job instead of me. And what I thought about a lot of times within this Bible study is that obviously I was lacking in prayer, my prayer life, so I was escalating my prayer life, and I was trying to focus it on specific things and things that mattered and things that pertained to God, and hopefully it was according to God's will. But then as I realized I was praying for this promotion and whether it would come about or not, my state of mind as far as when I felt like someone else was going to get the position, I realized that all of a sudden my prayers were no longer really centered towards getting this promotion anymore. And I thought, well, why is that? I mean, the decision hasn't been populated yet. We haven't been told who it was, but all of a sudden now I'm no longer really praying for me getting this job. And I thought, why did I do that? It's all of a sudden I was just yielding to the fact that the decision was already made. In other words, that I didn't feel like God had any influence based on my prayers. And I felt like, well, maybe he has no involvement or ability within this and so forth. So I just found myself pulling my prayers back as far as this promotion. And then I realized that by doing that, I was undermining the power and the will of God. And I was doubting in faith of whether or not he heard me, number one, and number two, whether or not he was really going to answer my prayer. And then I realized, well, he is answering my prayer to some avenue, and it may not be the way that I want it to be. Now, if I find out at the beginning of this next week that it's not me, I have to be humble about it and accept the fact that it's okay. Because when we do find ourselves in prayer and we're asking something very specific, we also have to be mindful that we are yielding to God when we do that. Now that's not easy because again, we're asking God for something specific because that's what we want. And we kind of in a way are asking for that last bit of a power of divine will of his to somehow influence this and make the decision somehow coming about that was going to benefit me. And if it doesn't come about in that way, then I'm going to be upset. I'm not going to be upset with God. I'm just going to be upset with the fact that I didn't get it. But am I really upset because I didn't get it, or I'm upset the fact that maybe he didn't intervene and give it to me? Sometimes we kind of find that we're in both places to some measure. But what I also realize is that there are many times in my life that God has intervened when I least expected it, or when he's brought things about in my life later on after I asked for it. I talked about this a couple times before, that this moment in my life happened when I think I was around 18 years old, and I was working at Taco Bell in Lebanon. Don't know why, but I was out there taking the trash out one night to the dumpster, and I don't know what was going on in my life at that moment that made me look up to heaven, and I asked God, I said, bring me someone in my life who will help me get closer to you. And I honestly asked that prayer in some form or fashion. Well, I married a woman. It was her family that brought me to Christ. And I stand before you today preaching the gospel.
Amen.
A lot of our prayers in life, we don't really see in the moment. But a lot of times we expect that they happen right then and there, do we not? I mean, God, I want this to come about, and I want it my way, and I expect it to come about when I want it, how I wanted it. And all of a sudden, sometimes the answer is no, wait a minute, or yes. But in every prayer that we ask for, or we give a petition to, there's always an answer. Even if we ask it with the wrong motives, and the wrong heart, and the wrong state of mind, even if we ask it with all this sin in my life, there's still an answer to our prayers. But when we get the answer, or when we see the answer, or experience the answer, we have to go back and say, well, why did God bring about the answer? If the answer is no, then why was it no? What can I see out of this answer that'll help me see his purpose? Was it something that I've done in the past? In other words, that I've not gotten over? Am I still willfully living in sin at the same time that I'm asking Him to bring about something in my life? Is the answer that, well, okay, well, yes, it will come to pass, but not yet, just hold on a second? Or sometimes the answer is immediately yes, and when those things are yes, why is it a yes? Now, what do I do with that yes answer? I want to encourage you this morning or tonight to think about Luke chapter 18 and this persistent prayer of this woman. In Luke 18, he says, "Now he was telling them a parable to show them at all times they ought to pray and not lose heart, saying, in a certain city there was a judge who did not fear God and did not respect man. There was a widow in that city, and she kept coming to him, saying, 'Give me legal protection from my opponent.' For a while he was unwilling, but afterwards he said to himself, 'Even though I do not fear God nor respect man, yet because this widow bothers me, I will give her legal protection. Otherwise, by continually coming, she will wear me out.' And the Lord said, 'Hear what the righteous judge said. Now, will not God bring about justice for his elect, who cry to him day and night? And will he delay long over them? I tell you that he will bring about justice for them quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?'" In other words, at the end of that statement, will there be people who have sufficient faith to continue to pray regardless of what's going on in their lives? You know, 1 Thessalonians 5:17 says, "Pray without ceasing." In other words, we pray all the time and never stop praying regardless. Here's an example of a woman who was so persistent because she was very passionate about something. And it came out in a measure that she was crying out for this resolve. Well, if you think about an unrighteous person who heard what she was asking for, granted her petition, think about our righteous God hearing our cries. Will he not bring about our petitions? When we go to him and cry out to him on bended knee, do we think that he's hearing us? Or do we think that, well, maybe he's not listening to me at this moment because he got better things going on? I mean, there was a guy that scored a touchdown this afternoon and he knelt down and prayed to God and thanked him for allowing him to do that. Now, is that something that we really think, well, God's not going to listen to me who is praying over someone who is really ill because he's over here answering an NFL football player's prayer that he scores the game-winning touchdown? The point is that God has very important things and agenda to do. And your life, the moment where we are in a petition that we are crying out to him on bended knee, he hears us. And we have the confidence to know that he does hear us and that he does care. But the challenge is when we get up from that bended knee and all of a sudden we don't feel like we had the resolve, we say, well, okay, God, you didn't care about me. You don't care about my petition. You don't care about my cry and my life and what's going on. And we want this, all of a sudden, this expected, immediate answer, the way that we wanted it to come about. And God is always going to reply to us, there's an answer, yes, and I hear your cry. And I'm going to help you, and I'm going to help you in such a way that you need. But in the moment, it's not going to be what you think you need. In other words, we ask for things sometimes according to my will, not his will. Well, God, I need all of a sudden, I need some money because I've got to pay all these bills. Well, instead of just having a guy walk up to your house and knock on your door and open the bag and say, well, here you go, God's going to give you an opportunity to make that happen. God's going to bring someone in your life to help you with whatever it is in your life. That could be our brothers and sisters in Christ. It could be some other avenue, but he's always out there helping us. Now, if you're taking any money that you have and you're squandering on other things in life, how do we turn around and expect him to help us with our bills? So we have to be mindful and be careful about the things that we're asking for and the measure in which we're dealing with those things. But if we do so in faith and we're diligent about it, we have confidence to know that he hears us. In 1 John chapter 5, he says, "This is the confidence which we have before him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. And if we know that he hears us in whatever we ask, we know that we have the requests which we have asked from him." Now again, think about this. We can ask him for something and he will give it to us. Now this morning I talked about the grace of God, and the fact is that we are unworthy servants before him and that he owes us absolutely nothing. But anything that we are and anything that he has given us is because of his grace. Now think about this. He didn't have to send his son to die for you. He didn't have to bring about the avenue of remissions of sins. He didn't have to give us the ability to be forgiven of those sins. But yet he did. An additional side of that, he's giving us eternal life in heaven. Again, he doesn't have to do that. He's also promised that we are his children, that he will provide for us. He will protect us. He will give us aid. He will encourage us. He will bring about all these things for us if we just ask for those things. Half the challenge that we have in life is that we simply don't ask. We don't ask, seek, and knock for things in our life. And the reason why we don't do that is because we doubt. We question. You know, when someone that I really love is in the hospital and they're ailing and they're sick, I'm on bended knee with everything that I've got and I'm pouring everything that I am and I'm praying to him and just asking him to heal this person of their affliction or whatever it is. But as I go about my daily life and I'm just kind of going through the motions, I feel like I'm just living a life of mere hope. Well, I hope I get that job today. I hope that I have food on the table today. I hope that I can make it through this day. Well, why don't we take the same passion that we had prayer over here and then put that same passion and desire and faith in everything that we do? And if we do that, what we're doing is we are yielding to God and understanding that there is nothing that I have in my life that I have done. Anything that I have, it is because of him. Sure, I may have went out and I've done my job and I worked hard for those things, but in the grand scheme of things, God gave it to us. All the way around you is a farm country. Okay, and now you can go out there and you can plant the seed and you can cover it up. That's all you can do. Where'd you get the seed? It was God. Where'd you got the dirt? It was God. But what do you have to now do? You have to wait on whom? God. Rain, sun, growth. It's all God. In the grand scheme of things, I think we live in what we call a vending machine area, thinking that we can just walk up any time at a drive-thru and order food and it's just boom, there it is. We can put money in a machine and boom, there it is. Where do you think you got that from? Where do we think it all came from? And when we live in that mentality, the challenge is that we live an ungracious life. Thinking that we just walk up somewhere, we get it, boom, and like it's no thought to us how we got it. Not only did we not ask for it, but we didn't even give thanks when we got it. Here he's talking about if we ask him anything that's what? According to his will. In other words, I have to go back to the Bible and I have to think, what is his will for my life? Is it prosperity? Is it wealth? Is it that I have a big house, that I have a fat bank account? Is it that everybody loves me and knows me by name? What is the purpose of my life? And so that way I want to tailor all my prayers towards God's purpose for my life. Now, you may somehow reap some rewards and benefits in my life. You may have a good career and a good job that does yield very good money and a very good home and so forth. And that's great. It's a blessing. But then again, what do we do with those things? Do we recognize where those things come from? Do we give God praise because it was because of him, excuse me, that we have these things? In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 12, he says, "For the eyes of the Lord are towards the righteous, but his ears attend to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." Again, this gives us confidence in one way, but it gives us a warning in the other. "For the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous." Okay, so in other words, God sees us. Okay, the ears, his ears, attend to their prayer. In other words, God hears us. So God sees everything in your life, number one, but he also hears everything in your life. There's not a moment where you've ever been secluded and lonely and depressed that he's never seen you or heard you in that moment. Although you may have thought you've been by yourself and going through those things personally and individually, you were never alone. He was always there, always has been there. And what he's asking you to do is he's asking you to bring forth those petitions. Say, "I need you, God. I need you to help me in my life." And then be very specific. What is it you need help with? Half the time is that we go to God and say, "God, just be with me today." It's pretty a broad statement here, but be specific. "God, I need your strength to get through this day because there is this coworker that I just don't get along with. Help me have the words today that will help encourage them to think differently of me and think differently of their life." Be specific within those things. Ask him specifically for the things to help you get through your life. But again, we have to ask. I feel like so many times It's just like a parent. Your child's there, and if your child comes up to you and asks for something, you give them whatever they need, whatever they want, because you're a loving parent, right? You wouldn't just ignore the child or turn the child away. I kind of wonder if God's up there just saying, come on, talk to me. I know what you need, but just talk to me. Now, I believe so many times that God gives us things in life even when we don't ask. And that's another prayer of thanksgiving that we must give Him. To say thank you for the times that you have provided for me, although I never ask. But how many times do I wonder if He's just waiting? Oh, I'm going to do it. Just ask. Just come to me. Because it shows how much we rely upon Him. Shows how much we believe in Him. How much faith we have in Him. How much love we have in Him. And then when we do that, it's all of a sudden, boom, there it is. The most powerful being in all the earth and all of creation is on our side, ready to do anything for you. And yet sometimes we doubt His ability. He created all this and beyond anything we could ever see. He granted forth His Son to die upon the cross, and people thought, well, you know what? Just bring forth your power and just smite everybody and that's it. No, He died upon the cross. And they thought, well, we defeated Him. No, you didn't. He rises up again from the grave 3 days later, and that's when the power of God was demonstrated. And if God can do that, He can do anything for you. He can help you in any affairs in your life if we just ask Him for it. However, on the flip side, He says this. At the end of this verse, the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Think of all the things that we have done against God. Now, the great thing about prayer is that we can go before Him and ask repentance for those prayers. Say, I'm sorry for those things. And turn from our things in life. But what if we don't? What if we choose to have a willful, sinful life and whatever it is, and yet in the same avenue say, God, I want you to hear me and I want you to see my petitions and prayers? We ought not to expect that He will hear us and answer our prayers. And I say that as in a holy and pure and divine God has no commonality with anything that is wicked and sinful. We ought to go before His throne and bow before Him in reverence and awe, bring our petitions of sorrowfulness and forgiveness before we'd ever bring anything that we need in life other than that. It's just like He says in Matthew chapter 7, if you have anything against your brother, before you come to my throne and give up this offering, go and settle your account with your brother before you come here, because you have this division. You have divisions in life and relationships so much, and we hold on to those divisions. We can't get over those divisions. But at the same time, we want to go to God and say, God, I need these things in my life, and I hope you provide these things in my life. How do we do that? We have to make good with our brethren. We have to make good with our lives. We have to make good with our relationship with God. And then when we do that, He welcomes us to bring forth anything that we need. When we think about the answer of prayers, we always get an answer regardless. There's an event here that happened with King David when he went after Bathsheba and he sent Uriah upon the battlefield and he got him killed. We see here that the child of David would be struck down with illness. And Nathan goes before David and he gives his parable and everything. And David said, well, that man should surely die. And Nathan says to him, he says, you know what? You're the man. And here's what David goes on to say in 2 Samuel chapter 12. So Nathan went to his house. Then the Lord struck the child that Uriah's widow bore to David so that he was very sick. David therefore inquired of God for the child, and David fasted and went and lay all night on the ground. The elders of his household stood beside him in order to raise him up from the ground, but he was unwilling and would not eat food with them. Then it happened on the seventh day that the child died, and the servants of David were afraid to tell him that the child was dead, for they said, behold, while the child was still alive, we spoke to him, and he did not listen to our voice. How then can we tell him that the child is dead, since he might do himself harm? But when David saw that his servants were whispering together, David perceived that the child was dead. So David said to his servants, is the child dead? And they said, he is dead. So David arose from the ground, washed, anointed himself, and changed his clothes, and he came into the house of the Lord and worshipped. Then he came to his own house, and when he requested, they set food before him, and he ate. Then his servant said to him, "What is this thing that you have done? While the child was alive, he fasted and wept. But when the child died, you arose and ate food." He said, "While the child was still alive, I fasted and wept. For I said, 'Who knows, the Lord may be gracious to me, that the child may live.' But now he has died, why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I will go to him, but he will not return to me." David, in his innermost pain, he went before the Lord and he pleaded with God that let this child be well. He fasted. I'm sure he probably put on some form of a sackcloth. He knelt down in prayer endlessly, rejected any other outside source to him because he devoted everything he was to God in prayer at that moment, pleading with God to change his mind. What was the answer? You might say the answer was no. It was. However, in David's case, what happened here? You had all the people here looking at David, and here he is, he's praying to his God. And they might have one response here to say, "Well, wait a minute here, where is your God? Is he not listening to you? The child ends up dying, and your God has no petition towards you to help you. What God said was to happen should happen, plain and simple, and we have no right to contradict that. Now, we have every right to go to God and plead with him." But in this case, David recognized his sin. Psalm 51 illustrates that. He recognized his sin before God, "Before you and you only, God, I have sinned." And whatever was going to happen to David's life, he was willing to accept that. Now, it was in this moment of prayer and fasting that he is yielding to God because he wasn't yielding to God in his life. And now the recourse, the earthly discipline, was so much that the child was going to die because it was going to save David's eternal soul. Because what did David do? Did he get mad at God? Did he curse God? Was he like a Judas and just went out and hung himself? Or was he more like a Peter and realized what he had done wrong? What does he say here? He says in verse 20, "So David arose from the ground, he washed, he anointed himself, he changed his clothes, he went into the house of the Lord and he worshiped God." The same God who took his child from him. But it wasn't God that took the child from him. It was David's sins. So many times we blame God for the things in our lives that have happened because it was something we did. God didn't sin. We did. And if we deserve something, then so be it. Because in the end, what is going to be the outcome of it? I hope that the outcome of whatever it is in your life is that you still worship God. Don't stop praying. Don't stop seeking God when all of a sudden we feel like our answer is no. We turn away from God so many times because we don't think he hears us. He doesn't care for us. He doesn't love us. Wait a minute, God, I deserve better than this. No, we don't. The morning's lesson talked about that. We don't deserve God's grace. We have sinned against him. But yet he has graciously given us his grace so much. For David, the grace of God would come about in his life. He would be king. He would go on to reign. He would have a fruitful life. He would be a man after God's own heart. And what the other people noticed as David was submissive before God was this: a king bowed down before a king. The greatest man in the country yielded before the Almighty King. A king of the country was completely powerless when it came to this. And he yielded and he gave everything he was to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And he was content with the answer. He rose up and he didn't go eat. He went and worshiped God first. Then he ate. It was a priority. It was a recognition. It was a submissiveness. One other example, if you will, with me tonight. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, a very familiar event here. The Apostle Paul here has a thorn in his flesh. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 7, he says, "Because of the surpassing greatness of the revelation, For this reason to me, from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I implored the Lord 3 times that it might leave me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weakness so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Here's a man that went 3 times, very passionate about what he wanted, what he needed. Don't know what the thorn of the flesh is. We can speculate that forever. But he said, there's something in my life that is making me very uncomfortable, and God, I am pleading you to take this from my life. Again, a man who recognized, I am the chief of sinners, that I am what I am by the grace of God, that I'm an appointed apostle, not that I appointed myself. I'm not really worthy to be an apostle, but yet I am an apostle. And here's a man who has no right really to ask God for anything, but he does, and it's okay. But he appeals to God because he knows that God cares for him, and he's asking him to take this thorn out of my flesh, this messenger of Satan. And when he implores God 3 times, what was God's answer? His answer was no. But what was Paul's response? Fine. No, that's not what his response was. His response was this: my grace is sufficient for you, in verse 9, for power is perfected in weakness. In other words, he took what God said, his answer, and he found the silver lining in it and realized that it's so much better that he doesn't have the thorn taken out of his life. So many times in our life, we look at something that's in my life and that's just a burden. It's just uncomfortable. It's not what I want. And surely we just don't really want to deal with that. I mean, nobody really does. But what is it doing for our lives? What is it making us realize in the grand scheme of things? Number one, there's a God. Now, he could have said, well, there isn't a God because he doesn't care for me and he's not going to answer my prayer. But no, he says there is a God. He recognizes this. But what does he recognize? It is in his weakness that he's made strong. The power of God is now being perfected within his weakness. If God took the thorn out of his flesh, would the power of God have been demonstrated through the Apostle Paul? Not at all. Well, it could have been because he took the thorn away from him. But there's only 2 people that really knew about this thorn, probably 3. Satan, Paul, and God. But when he has the thorn in the flesh, whatever it is, Paul's able to demonstrate the power of God through his life to a multitude of people. And Paul recognized it's not about me. So many times we pray to God for this answer because it's all about me. I want you to help me. I want you to do this for me. I want you to take this out of my life for me. And what God is trying to do is something that's for you, but it's also for everybody else. Because there's something in someone else's life that they can associate with you that you can have sympathy and understanding. Because when you get up over these things and you conquer these things in life, you will encounter somebody who has something very similar that they're struggling with. Everybody in this room, everywhere you go, you hear someone crying out for God. They need something. They can't get over something. They're addicted with something. They struggle with something. They're angry about something. They're torn apart because of something. Everywhere you go, and every one of us has that problem. But it takes someone just like us, right next to us, to help us get over those things. Paul recognizes, my grace is sufficient for you. God's power is perfected in my weakness. Most gladly, therefore, what will I do? I will rather boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then I am strong. He took something in his life, and he illuminated it to the world so that they would see the power of God. He prayed 3 times that it would leave me. But God had a better plan for that in his life. And he saw it. He recognized it early. He accepted it. And he took that item and he didn't go around every day of his life saying, well, look at me, have sympathy for me because I've got this thorn in the flesh, whatever it may be. No, it was everybody else that looked at his life and wonder how in the world are you getting through this life? I'll be glad to tell you. His name is Jesus Christ. And His grace was imputed to me, and His grace can be imputed to you. My encouragement for you tonight is this. As you pray to God for whatever it is in your life, number one, let it be according to His will. And when you do that, though, be willing to be subjective that whatever His will is, that I'm willing to accept that will regardless of what it means for my life. Knowing that He has a better plan for my life. He knows the outlook of my life. He knows what it's going to be for my life. He knows what it's going to project for my life. Although I can't see a moment in front of me, He can see it all. One of the best things for my life is to look back at my life and see where I used to be, but where I am today. Now, I'm not talking about that in an avenue that I want to go back to the old way of life. But I look at my life and I say, Kevin, I am what I am because of the grace of God. I've been able to endure and conquer the things in my life. I've been able to excel and be victorious in my life. And whether it be physically or more importantly, spiritually, it is all because of Jesus Christ and my willingness and allowance to let Him work through my life. So whatever your prayer it be, let it be according to His will. Believe on whatever He asks, whatever you ask, that He will bring it about. And if His answer is no, go find out what is it you want from my life, God, and be willing to accept that, knowing that God has a huge plan for you in your life later on. The invitation is for anyone tonight to give your life to Christ. If it be your will that you come forward, that you ask for forgiveness of sins, may you come forward now as you stand and sing.